Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk. Could do a multi-part series on this book, but I'm going to attempt to cruise through it in one or two. I'm not sure yet. This was recommended to me, and I was in the middle of reading about six books, and this book just, sometimes a book just catches the urge and the energy, and it was one of those I couldn't put it down. And it's not the kind of book that's for everybody, but it caught my attention and explained so much and still pertinent. The Religion of Technology, The Divinity of Man and the Spirit of Invention, David F. Noble, N-O-B-L-E, Penguin Books, published in 1997. Now, first I want to comment on it. It's interestingly written because there are so many quotes, and I'm a quote lover. I do a lot of that. There's so many quotes over and over again proving the, kind of the same point. And so it's almost like the writer is invisible. He comments a little bit, but not that much. And yet it doesn't matter because it didn't matter to me because what he's conveying and the way he's conveying it is just... That's the hook for me. I'll read the back cover blurb. Spanning 1,000 years, David F. Noble's fascinating book uncovers the religious roots and spirit of Western technology by examining the imaginings of monks, explorers, magi, scientists, and engineers. The Religion of Technology brings to light the otherworldly inspiration behind the apparently worldly endeavors by which we habitually define Western civilization. Noble traces the Western idea of technological development from the 9th century when the useful arts became connected to the concept of redemption, up to our own time as human beings began to exercise godlike knowledge and powers with nuclear weapons, manned space exploration, artificial intelligence, and genetic engineering. Noble then poses this question: has the convergence of technology and religion outlived its usefulness? Has the convergence of technology and religion outlived its usefulness? He contends that we must strive to separate ourselves from the religion of technology, which continues dangerously to drive our enchantment with unregulated technological advance. So he starts with the first example he gives is of the plow, I think in ninth century. Now, the plow, he says, it changed things from working with the earth to how to utilize or use the earth, sort of like a beginning of industrial era stuff, to have the plow. So that's a fascinating thing, because nowadays we tend to think of technology as all the fancy gadgets and the computer, the hardware and stuff that if you don't know that stuff, you have no clue how it works. But he shows how invention after invention, the pattern is very, very similar, if not the same. In this book, over and over again, that's what astounded me, is the amount of inventions and technology that is sort of buoyed by this religious drive. And what that revolves around is technology as a form of transcendence. So it's getting away from the earth. And much of the book is based on the Judeo-Christian Adam in the Garden of Eve and the fall and the redemption and the expulsion from paradise. And that it's millennialism, that there are end times, and so we need a savior. And that savior becomes the technology, the gadget. It mentions the messianic voyage of Columbus. Columbus was carrying a Bible and on a messianic mission. And what he calls the useful arts as a medium of salvation. And a lot of it has to do with back to before, the whole redemptive thing is about going back to before Adam went awry. So, you know, Adam had his sin, and so we're trying to get back to before that, a mind fuck kind of thing to me. Like, how do you get back to something when the whole history, the whole religious stuff has been since then? So then why, you know, it's a tricky thing there. And the other thing that it highlighted to me was the sort of sense of perfection. As if, you know, Adam and Eve, they made a mistake and now we have to restore perfection. which I find a kind of faulty premise, but it's sort of like the way the technology is seen, you know, as there's a certain perfectness of it. Like, well, now I can do this, and now everything's fine. Now everything's perfect. So I think it gets into a lot of the psychology that's behind all this stuff, too. The word dominion is over and over and over again is mentioned as dominion, which is a biblical thing of dominion over nature. So this background of the religiosity then gets into the technology as this having dominion over nature. And even the phrase uses Adamic for Adam, A-D-A-M-I-C, Adamic dominion. And also some of the technology breeds a kind of delusions of, you know, delusions of playing God. I have a note, the trajectory away from working with Mother Earth has them obsessed. The grandiosity for humanity, the evolution from the hardware. And that's moved on to the, the genomes and the GMOs and genetically modified and... It's sort of also, there's a phrase, the transcendence of mortality, as if this, you know, artificial intelligence and all these things are, you know, we can put our consciousness into a robot and transcend mortality. So it's very, a lot of this stuff and the psychology and the religiosity of it is otherworldly at the expense of this actual world. And some of the, I laughed out loud a bunch of times because some of the things were so preposterous. Like, here's one where the scientists would emerge as a new species and leave humanity behind. That's like some of the people doing these things are like really literally mad scientists who are thinking that with the technology, and even more so since this book was written, with the artificial intelligence and the cyber, you know, cyber people and whatever it's called, thinking that they are literally creating a new species. Another one that I wrote crazy in the note, this is a quote, "The cardinal tendency of progress is the replacement of an indifferent chance environment by a deliberately created one. As time goes on, the acceptance, the appreciation, even the understanding of nature will be less and less needed. In its place will come the need to determine the desirable form of the humanly controlled universe." So that's just flat-out megalomania. Anthropocentric megalomania. It makes me think of the... I got some microgreens, and they were grown... I looked at the company online, and I won't be getting them again because it's like they're grown in this vertical farming with no connection to the soil. Now, maybe it has nutrients, and maybe it helps a lot of urban people, and it could be a wave of the future that helps people, but there's just no connection with the earth with it. Other illusions in the religious sense is like, you know, God is the master craftsman, so man is emulating God with his master technology and in his image and that kind of thing. Where they always say in his image, but like, where is the blueprint for the image? He created us in his image, but what image? That's not talked about. What is the image? In the Kabbalah, the Yahweh Sabaoth is a personal image. Everybody has a unique spark that is their own image of, you know, so-called God. So this generic image I find just, you know, laughable. Also, is much of the world, the science world, being is referred to. There's a phrase, masculine millennium, and that merged with the military. That's a major turning point. When that merged with the military consciousness, that has created all these preposterous, you know, the drones and they're working on like robotic, whatever it is, mosquitoes and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's like but the military use is, I think, where things got extremely dangerous with the religion of technology. And here's a quote from Cindy Coburn. "Transcendence is a wrong-headed concept. It means escape from the earthbound and the repetitive, climbing above the everyday. It means putting men on the moon before feeding and housing the world's poor. The revolutionary step would be to bring men down to earth." And the then it continues, but respite from our transcendent faith in the religion of the machine, as Lewis Mumford long ago insisted, requires that we alter the ideological basis of the whole system. Such an undertaking demands defiance of the divine pretensions of the few in the interest of securing the mortal necessities of the many, and presupposes that we disabuse ourselves of our inherited otherworldly propensities in order to embrace anew our one and only earthly existence. That, to me, is the gist of the gist of it, and that, you know, it's the whole thing about the technology as being a savior is extremely dangerous, as we get less and less with touch with the earth. And then again, what is not as talked about again is that where the mining and where the technology comes from. The most common example is that the cobalt that goes in most people's, or not all, of the cell phones and many of the gadgets to help power them, that the abusive mining in the Congo of little, you know, children doing mining. So this is a long history too of mining to produce goods, which then become like a savior, and it creates this kind of false paradise for those who are using them and enjoying them, but meanwhile, who is making them, and what are the repercussions and the side effects of the earth? As we have seen, those given to such imaginings are in the vanguard of technological development, amply endowed and in every way encouraged to realize their escapist fantasies, often displaying a pathological dissatisfaction with and deprecation of the human condition. They are taking flight from the world, pointing us away from the earth, the flesh, the familiar, offering salvation by technical fix, in Mary Midgley's apt description, all the while making the world over to conform to their vision of perfection. So there's one good example of the making the world over to conform to their vision of perfection. So, you know, you've seen those ads where, like, you hold the cell phone and the sleek, the feel and the shape, and it's all to that perfection. But what about the perfection of the spiral shapes in a sunflower? Of which, if you look at them long enough, you could get a little dizzy. And it is here that the religion of technology can rightly be considered a menace. Lynn White, for example, long ago identified the ideological roots of the ecological crisis in the Christian dogma of man's transcendence of and rightful mastery over nature. More recently, the ecologist Philip Riegel has likewise traced current justifications of unregulated bioengineering to their source in late medieval natural theology. So the gist, I would say, is that the motivation to transcend rather than truly help, and that gets, as he mentions, becomes in warfare and surveillance and control and genetic engineering, all these things that are a product of this sense of trying to dominate instead of work with, and attempt to transcend or to redeem ourselves instead of just taking care of each other. So there's lots of good quotes and this and that, so I might do a part two, but that's that gets the gist across for now. So thank you for listening. Be well.